Hey, everybody, and welcome to Learning from Smart People. I am your host, Rob Oliver, and today is one of those fun days for me. I get to welcome a fellow Pittsburgher onto the show. And listen, I like to highlight smart people from around the globe. And you know this, we've had people on from South Africa, we've had people on from Europe, we've had people on from South America. I've got a guest that I'm working with to come on from Australia, and it's like, there are a ton of smart people in the world, but one of the coolest things for me is bringing on the smart people from Pittsburgh, because we are, I mean, it's a small city, it's a friendly, but it's an amazing place. Most people think Pittsburgh, they think Rust Belt, they think the steel mills, and Pittsburgh has really reinvented itself as kind of a technological hub. We've got, you know, universities that are doing amazing things, and we've got fantastic people, and that's really one of the things that I love about living here in Pittsburgh is the people. And today, one of those people is joining me. His name is Daniel Massimino. He is a recovering addict, a positive influencer, and the president and CEO of the Credit Connection, which is a firm that helps consumers and startups repair, rebuild, and leverage their credit to do amazing things. Among those amazing things are buying houses, starting businesses, and creating financial abundance. Daniel, welcome to the show, man.
Hey, it's nice to be here.
Daniel, tell me a little bit about your backstory then, because one of the things that you're dealing with, you had started a company when you were pretty young, right?
Yeah, I did.
Can you tell me a little bit about that?
So I could give you the long version or the short version. I'll try to give you the most timely version, but it was all centered around iPhones and electronics. And initially we just started out fixing electronics. And then I quickly realized I could buy broken electronics because, you know, people have this thought that they're worthless when they're pretty cheap to fix if you know which ones to buy. And then I started to resell them on eBay and Amazon when I was in high school. And that quickly just grew into a intense focus on how can I get more electronics that I can buy and resell. And so around the age of maybe like 19, I ended up meeting this guy. He owned like 20 or 25 Verizon stores in the area. And so we started to buy all of their trade-ins. So if you went to a Verizon store, not the corporate Verizon stores, but the authorized resellers, and you traded in your phone, they would come to my company and then we would either repair them, or, you know, sometimes people trade in perfectly good phones, so we would just inspect them and then we'd resell them on eBay and Amazon. So eventually I just got to this point where I realized that eBay and Amazon had a lot of control over me and my company, and so started to think about ways that I could just sell directly to you know, in large volumes to other businesses and avoid the whole headache of e-commerce. And so we started that process, and we eventually, you know, had customers in just about every major country you could think of. So like Hong Kong, Dubai, Spain, France, Canada, Mexico, Germany. I mean, you name it, we sold product there.
Sure.
And so all was good and well. And so I stayed in that business and started to grow it, and we did a lot of sales and things like that. But I was pretty young, and yeah, I just didn't really know too much about like managing a business and like operations and accounting and customer support and shipping and insurance and all of these things. And so in a matter of I want to say like 3 months or so, like my whole business just collapsed and it was a nightmare.
Wow. And so, I mean, it's one of those crazy things that here you are, you're young, you're an entrepreneur, you've got a business that's doing literal international business with, and it's not, you know, you can joke about this. Doing international business does mean you sell something to Canada. The first time you sell something to Canada, congratulations, you're an international business person, right? But you're not just doing that. You're actually running an international business with customers in Europe, in the Middle East, and, you know, just in Asia. And what you find out is that, you know, you're swimming in deeper waters than what you realize. And what you have.
For sure.
Yeah.
The main thing for me was like managing, I don't want to say money, but the movement of large amounts of money and like bills and expenses and like profit margin and, you know, I mean, because we were dealing with lots of money. Like, you know, we would buy $500,000 worth of phones at one time. And our largest invoice was like $250,000. So we're literally packaging up, you know, $250,000 worth of phones and shipping them across the world. And just a lot of, you know, managing cash flow and things like that. And also the expenses side too. So it was a lot of learning Spanish, but there's a lot of moving parts, and it's just not something, unless you have the right systems and processes in place, it can be very difficult to manage.
Yeah. Well, so I've got a good friend who played poker. Okay. And he explains that in poker, there is a learning curve, and you basically have to pay the price to learn how to play at a high level. And in some ways, that's kind of what you're talking about. As a young person, you know, unfortunately had to pay the price to acquire the business knowledge that your business, the way that it was being run, just didn't work out. And in the middle of all of that, you're also dealing with some addiction issues. Is it all right to talk about that?
Yeah, man, we could talk about anything. I'm an open book.
Yeah. So tell me what happened, man. Like, where did you end up, and what kind of made you realize that this is something that is something that's controlling my life?
Yeah. So, I mean, probably, I don't know, I would say like high school, at some point in high school, you know, I just started, you know, drinking and, maybe smoking some weed. Like, I mean, I wouldn't say most kids, but I think most kids in high school, at least where I grew up, you know, I would say half of them probably drink on the weekend, and things like that. And so that's just how it started. After I file, or after I, like, you know, my first business, I guess like in between there. So, I mean, I never really got into hard drugs, but like, you know, you have cocaine and things like that, which I guess is a hard drug, but not like a lot. It wasn't a very big problem in my life. And then when I filed bankruptcy, when I was 21 and my business collapsed, like I just experienced like this insane amount of anxiety and, depression for the first time in my life. Up until that point, I didn't really know what anxiety was. I didn't know what depression was. And so I started taking like SSRIs, which are selective serotonin something uptakes, just for depression and anxiety. That was like how it started. And from that point on, like I didn't know it at the time, but I really never felt right. I definitely didn't feel whole. And then moving forward, like I'm still working for myself and, you know, failing and trying. And so I kind of managed that. My girlfriend at the time didn't like drinking. So I quit drinking during that period of time. And there was something about sort of with, once you start taking anxiety medication, you realize, well, you can take a pill that solves a problem. And it's like, well, what other pills can I take to solve my problems? You know? And wow. So some life things happened with like, in my family, and it was like extremely chaotic and stressful and traumatizing. And so every time but as I came across more anxiety and more stress, it was just like, well, I could take a pill for that. And both recreationally and prescribed. So fast forward like 3 years later, you know, I'm prescribed 6 different medications for all of the side effects from my initial medication. Not to mention when I was initially prescribed with anxiety, like I was also smoking a lot of weed. I was drinking, I was doing cocaine. So like that probably, you know, made me feel anxiety when I wasn't doing those things. So anyways, so I'm doing these things and in the back of my mind, I'm like, I can't do this forever. And what would happen was I would experience a lot of external success. You know, I'd be making money, I'd have friends, I'd be doing recreational activities, my business would be, you know, going all right. And I'd still feel like this zombie inside. I just felt empty and hollow. And it was a direct correlation of all of these things that I'm putting into my body. You know, I'm taking medicine to wake up, I'm taking medicine to make sure that I'm not stressed throughout the day, I'm taking medicine to go to sleep. On top of that, I'm doing recreational drugs and I'm drinking a lot of alcohol because I have all this stress, and to get rid of my stress, I drink because I want to let some steam out. Mm-hmm. And I just realized, I'm like, what is the point of working hard to reach a destination of success or the future when I keep coming to the same point in my life, which is I just feel empty and hollow and just not like a human, you know? And so I just decided, I'm like, I'm just going to stop all this stuff, because when you're that medicated, the doctor's solution to getting you off of the medication is to give you more medication. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, this doesn't make any sense, which it does make sense, because if you cold turkey quit certain medications, you can either die or you can have serious side effects.
Sure.
But for me, there was no doing another medication. You know, there was none of that, because it just wouldn't work for me. You know, there was no way out other than for me to either kill myself or to stop taking medication. And so I just decided, I'm like, you know what? Nothing's as important as me feeling happy, you know? So if I have to, you know, suffer and to go through this process, then so be it, because I don't want to find success again and feel this way. Because there's nothing worse than finding success. And you should feel good, but you don't. And worse than that, you feel like a shell of a human being.
Wow.
So that was about 2 years ago that I started that process. And the first 6 to 12 months were extremely terrible. I would say probably by about 3 months into it, I mean, I wanted to kill myself actively every single day. I didn't actively try to kill myself, but I was so depressed that I really didn't do anything other than sleep and think about killing myself. And that's not the type of person I am, but that's what these drugs do to your brain, you know? And so it was like, I think like September, probably like September, like 2 years ago, I ended up going to the hospital for a couple of weeks. And that was like really the start of this whole process of what some people call recovery. You can call it whatever you want, but because that was the first time in my life that I admitted that I needed help, you know, that I admitted that I needed something. I couldn't do it by myself. And I started the process, and then I started to meet some people that were going through the same things, and strangers that, you know, just went so far out of their way to, you know, help me throughout this process. And I mean, it's literally a miracle, because I sit here and I look at my life today. One, all the things that I lost throughout that process, because when that first happened, I lost my mind. I couldn't think. I literally felt stupid, very, very stupid, to the point where I couldn't really do much, let alone run a business. So I put my business on hold. I actually didn't have a job for a long time. And even when I did start to work again, I just started at like a burger shop or a restaurant, and I got fired, and I started at a burger shop and I got fired, and I just kept on doing something until my brain started working again. But it's absolutely, I mean, a miracle that I'm alive, because I think, I mean, I literally should be dead. I mean, I have a picture on my phone of a rope around my neck. And I keep it on there on purpose, because it doesn't trigger me, and it reminds me of where I've came from. And so that way I never forget how close I am to, you know, just making the wrong decisions and to screwing everything up.
It's one of those things that I've not been through the recovery process from an addiction standpoint. But from a personal standpoint, I know that feeling of understanding that I can't do this myself. Okay. And listen, I've got a physical disability. I've got, you know, some pretty major physical limitations as a result of a spinal cord injury. And that feeling of not being able to handle things yourself, not being in control, is really a difficult thing. And there's, when you come to the realization that there is something out there, there's people out there, there is, you know, a higher power, a God, whatever it is that you're understanding, it really has a big difference. And you begin to understand that life is not just pointless. Life is not just kind of accumulating stuff, but there's more to it. And it's deeper than that, man.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you hit on a lot of good points there. And, I don't know. I can only feel great gratitude and you know, I feel a responsibility to carry that message of hope to other people that are going through it, and set an example of what's possible for people's lives. And that's really why I'm like just so open and honest about it, because, you know, if I could say my story, it's not because I think I'm great or whatever, but if somebody else is you know, going through a similar thing, and they can see where I've taken my life, and it shows them that it's possible. And throughout this whole process, I realized that hope is by far the greatest gift that you can give anyone. And so I hope that by sharing my story, it gives someone else hope. And if somebody else gets hope from it, then I'm a happy man.
Yeah. Well, listen, the hope is a beautiful thing, man, because I know from a different perspective, like I said, there are days when it just feels overwhelming and you can't handle it, but to have hope that we're going to get through this, there's a good place, there are good things coming. The other piece though, that goes with that, that I really appreciate, and you didn't say this specifically, but you're handling this with truth, okay? Because there's a lot of people that feel like guilt and shame and fear about, especially during the time when they're going through addiction. And then once they come out of it, they are feeling ashamed of what they've gone through and they don't want anyone to hear about it. And by you being open about it, you being honest about it, that's what is going to give other people hope to say, listen, here's a guy that is real about what's happening and is really sharing his story. And it's a story that says when you're feeling like there's no hope, when you're feeling like your life's out of control, when you're feeling like you need help, it's okay. There's hope after that. That's beautiful, man. Thanks for sharing that.
Yeah, no problem. And honestly, from my own perspective, just being an open book makes it just, I have so much weight, like less weight on my shoulders. You know, I don't have to hide anything. I don't have to act like someone I'm not. And to be quite honest, the relationships that I formed, both my personal life and my business life, are that much better because of it, because I'm just being honest and transparent and I'm being myself and I'm being genuine. And being genuine is something that you don't see very often in life. And I think people can pick up on that.
Yeah. The beautiful thing is about telling the truth is you never have to remember what you said. You can say the same thing over again, because you're just sharing the truth and it, you know, listen, there are some times when it's not pretty and it can get you in trouble, but you don't have to be consumed with it and you don't have to really worry about that. Hey, listen, this is not where I expected our conversation to go. And I really appreciate that, you being willing to share on it. Let's take a little bit, because what you have done as part of all of this, you have started a new company and you're talking about the Credit Connection. Right. Tell me about what the Credit Connection is. And if you don't mind, just like, what is it that you're trying to help people with?
Right. So we're a credit repair organization. And so we help consumers and businesses fix negative problems with their credit. So that could be late payments, charge-offs, collections, bankruptcy. So we work on disputing the accuracy of this information on their credit report in hopes of getting it removed, so that way they can, you know, move on with their lives. And the second thing we do is we help people to rebuild their credit. So oftentimes, you know, when we remove negative stuff, they don't really have any positive things on their credit report, because for a long time they couldn't get approved for anything. And then finally, on the personal side, we help link people up with, you know, mortgage brokers, realtors, other financial professionals within our network that can help them with all the areas of credit and finance in their lives. On the business side, we help people build or start businesses, build business credit that's not attached to their social security number, which a lot of people don't know exists. And then we help business owners get access to every type of business funding that's available to them. The second part of your question, I forget, so you're going to have to remind me.
It's okay. I was so enamored with what you were saying. I think I forgot it too. But you talked a little bit about what you're doing. And I guess my follow-up question is, are you just doing this here in the Pittsburgh area? Is this something that you're doing nationwide? Or like, where are your clients coming from?
Yeah, so we serve all 50 states. We generate business basically two ways: through online advertising, so Facebook and Google ads, and then through referral partners. So a referral partner would be someone like a mortgage loan officer or another financial professional that deals with, you know, bad credit and also getting people approved for different types of lending products. And we find a lot of success through our referral network, simply because, you know, you have an authority figure such as a mortgage loan officer telling a consumer that wants a house, hey, you know, I want to sell you this house. I want to get you this loan, but you know, you need to do this service prior to me being able to do that. And so, and we like business to business relationships, but that's where we get to our customers from. And you know, the states that we serve, I would like to serve internationally, but credit reporting systems are different in every country. So that would be a big task.
Got it. All right. But it's one of those things that, listen, this goes out internationally. It goes out nationally. Anybody out there who's dealing with some credit issues, feel free to definitely get in touch with you and learn about that. Now, can you tell me about the process of transitioning your business? You go from a restaurant and getting fired, and you go to a burger joint and you get fired. And the next thing I know, you're here today talking about this, about your company, the Credit Connection that you've got going on. How do you make that transition from being kind of depressed, being down, being getting fired from your jobs in recovery to being a businessman today?
So I was self-employed prior to getting sober. And then I left the electronics industry because I just came to a point in my life that I thought that it might be time to move on. And I started looking for jobs. This was 3 years ago at this point. I'm living at home with my parents. I started looking for jobs, and I'm a college dropout, and I also was a failed business owner. So my confidence was pretty low going into these interviews. And also, I've just never had a job, so I don't even know how I'm supposed to act, you know? And so anyways, I started looking for sales jobs in Pittsburgh because, I mean, that's really all I could do, or at least what I thought I could do to make, you know, a decent living. And I just didn't find any sales jobs that were up my alley that I thought were worth my time. And the ones that I did find seemed like shady door-to-door sales or whatnot. So eventually I got a random email from a credit repair company in Connecticut, and it was just 100% commission work from home salesperson. This is prior to me getting sober. And it was, you know, had a great advertising, work from home, and you can make a lot of money. So I'm like, what the heck, you know, I don't want to work these crappy jobs. And I know a little bit about having bad credit because my business failed. So I was like, I'll give it a shot. And so the first month I worked my butt off, and I think I made like $900 in commission. And then the second month I worked my butt off some more, and I made like 4,000. And then the third month I worked my butt off, and I made like 10,000. Fourth month, worked my butt off, made 15. And then the fifth month I made like 21,000 bucks in commission. And I was like, huh, I'm pretty good at this, you know? And I really enjoyed it too, because I got to help people, which I really love to help people. I got to work with business owners, which I really love to work with business owners because I like to learn about different businesses. And three, I got to make decent money doing it. And four, on top of all that, I was good at it. The only problem was that the company that I was working for really didn't give a crap about their customers, and their systems and processes sucked. So I told them, I said, hey guys, you know, your systems and processes suck. It's hurt, you know, the customers are feeling it. And I'm a salesperson. So when I give somebody my word and you guys don't, you know, follow through on that, it looks poorly on me. And fourth, I don't care how much money I make. If we're not actually delivering service to our customers, I can't possibly sleep at night. And so they didn't care. And long story short, like February of 2018, I ended up leaving and just started my own thing. And then that's when I decided to get sober. So then, you know, I get sober again, my brain's all screwed up, and, it just started like, I knew I couldn't run a business, and I knew I couldn't sit around all day and just sleep and be depressed. So it was like, I just need to do something. And the biggest thing I had to let go of was my ego. You know, my ego held me back for so long because I was afraid of what other people thought of me. I thought I was too good to work at a restaurant, but really, none of that mattered. It was just about doing something. It was just about starting to move again, and not being afraid to fail, and also putting my ego to the side. So I actually had a lot of jobs between the restaurant to starting this thing up again. I'll explain them real quick. So first thing I did was I got a job at the restaurant, got fired the second day because they thought I was stealing. And then the next job I got was at a burger shop just on the weekends. And I got fired from there because I was just lazy. So then I applied for a job at Subway, and at this temp to hire place. So I ended up getting a job at a place called Fast Signs, selling signs. And I really didn't like that job, but it was the people were better. The people were better. So I forgot one job. I got a job selling promotional spots on golf scorecards.
Okay.
Believe it or not, that's a job. And I quit the third day because they basically told me it was okay to lie to people. And I said, this isn't the type of place that's conducive to the new life I'm trying to live.
Right.
So finally, my last job was I quit the sign shop to work as a logistics broker at a company down in the North Shore of Pittsburgh. So this was actually a decent career-wise job because you can make a decent career out of being a logistics agent because you're managing, you know, freight for Walmart and all sorts of other companies, right? And once you have the relationships, you know, it's a lifetime job. But I hated that job too. And my boss was a micromanager. Not to like talk poorly on her, but she was just a micromanager and we just didn't work out. So luckily the coronavirus happened. When the coronavirus happened, they sent us to work from home, but their systems weren't up to par with working from home, working remotely. And so they laid us all off. And like a couple weeks later, I'm sitting around talking to a friend of mine and I'm explaining to him my story, just like I'm explaining to you. And at the end of it, he's like, why don't you just do the credit thing again? And I'm like, why don't I just do that again? You got a point. And so I did. And I already had all the knowledge in the relationships and I already had all the systems set up. So it was pretty straightforward to get started again.
That's awesome, man. And it is yet another reminder about what happens, because here comes Corona. We have a pandemic and it sets everybody back. And here you are in the middle of it. You're like, you know what? I'm going to use this as an opportunity for growth. Yeah, it closed this door, but I'm gonna open my own door. So tell me, if people are looking to get a hold of you, either on a personal level or professionally, where's the best way to get a hold of you?
Best place would be on Instagram. My Instagram handle is @dan.pgh.
Beautiful.
Like Pittsburgh.
Yep. And I'll include that in the show notes, and I'll include it. You give me a couple other of your social media links and we'll put them in there so that people can follow up with you.
Awesome.
And you have shared with me two eBooks, and anybody that sends in and requests those, I will be happy to send them out. One is called 101 Ways to Improve Your Credit Score. And the other one is called Business Credit Decoded. I'll take those. Any of my listeners that get in touch with me, I'm happy to share those with you and you can learn about what Dan's doing. Daniel, thank you so much for being on. It has come time for three questions to establish your humanity. You ready, my friend?
Yes, sir.
All right. Who is your hero?
That's a really good question. The first person that comes to mind that's my hero would be my dad. Simply because growing up, he did so much for me and he taught me so much. And more importantly than all of that, he taught me how to learn. And I really appreciate that.
That's
about my dad.
That's awesome, man. And there is nothing to me, being a lifelong learner is just super important. And obviously that's where the impetus for this show came from.
I love to learn.
Yep. Tell me one thing that's on your bucket list.
One thing that's on my bucket list specifically for this year is to ride a horse on the beach in Mexico.
There you go. That's specific and that's awesome. Any particular beach, or you just whatever beach in Mexico that you can get to, taking a horseback ride down the beach will work.
Probably Cabo or Cancun, but I'm open to all beaches in Mexico.
There you go. All right. And if you have somebody coming in from out of town and they're coming into Pittsburgh for the first time, where are you taking them to eat? That is like, this is either the best restaurant in the area or this is your taste of Pittsburgh.
Oh, well, those are two different things.
and I'll let you answer both or pick one.
So my personal favorite restaurant in Pittsburgh is Nakama. Nakama is a hibachi place right in the South Side. And I've just loved it since I lived here in the South Side when I went to college about 6 years ago. And so I would take everybody there. But right now, since the coronavirus happened, they're actually doing a remodel. So I couldn't take somebody there. If I was to take somebody to iconic Pittsburgh, I mean, Permane's would be the obvious go-to, but I would probably take them to Fury's just because I'm Italian and I also love pizza.
Yeah. And Fury's has phenomenal pizza. It's one of the, I think that you're spot on there. You know, I feel like somebody needs to do a pizza tour of Pittsburgh, and kind of, you have Fiori's, you have Vincent's, you have Minio's, you have Beto's. There's just a bunch of different varieties of pizza that are all available. Hey, I'm in White Oak. We've got Luciano's here who their box.
There's a Luciano's out by us.
Yeah. Luciano's is fantastic. It's funny to me. Their boxes have like, their boxes, they must get them printed by the million or something, because they have voted best pizza in Pittsburgh. And on the side of it, it, like, I think the last pizza box we got, it goes up to maybe 2012, but they get voted as the best pizza in Pittsburgh every single year. And, you know, good, and they're not afraid.
Good marketing.
Yeah. It's, they're not afraid to charge you for it. Daniel, thanks so much for being on the show. I appreciate you sharing. I appreciate you sharing your story with openness, and I hope that it's something that gives somebody hope. And I appreciate what you're doing, and I hope that it provides a service for the folks that are out there looking to either build their credit or repair their credit, either personally or as a business. To everybody that's listening, thanks for tuning in today. I hope that you have enjoyed this and learned from it. And I will remind you, as always, that when you stop learning, you stop living. Have a great day, everybody.
Thank you.